Welcome to Forward, a podcast by EasyCare, where we protect what moves you with your host, Corey Smith, and co-host, Eric Howdige. The views and opinions expressed by guests in this podcast may not be those of the host or EasyCare and APCO Holdings Brands.
Welcome to Forward. I'm your host, Corey Smith, National Fixed Operations Training Director with EasyCare. Today, I'm being joined by my partner in crime, my co-host extraordinaire, Eric Howdige. Eric, how's it going?
It is going amazing. Weather's getting great. Can't complain. I can't wait for my 100-degree weather out here in Arizona. But even more exciting than the 100-degree weather coming out to Arizona is our guest today, Corey.
Who do we have?
We have a person that I'm a big fan of. His name is Jameson Carrier. Jameson, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you guys having me.
So I met Jameson a couple years back. It was actually here in Phoenix when we met. And one of the really cool things was we just got off to speaking about growth. We got off to speaking about leadership and different forms of social media. Never did I ever think that we'd be interviewing you on this podcast, speaking about one, your book that you already have out, a second one that just released not too long ago, and I can't wait to get into it. So with that being said, there is a couple questions that I really want to ask you, and I want people to know about, Jameson. In your work studying human behavior, what is something leaders believe motivate people, but actually does the opposite?
Oh, man. Good question. I think probably the biggest mistake that we make is that we sometimes we're guilty of thinking that everyone's motivated by the same thing. And all of us are unique. All of us have different things that motivate us. But if I had to pull out one thing, it's probably money. You know, money's important. We have to pay our bills. We want to support our families and we want to have some extra. But when it comes down to it, if money is your primary motivator and that is how you're going to motivate your team, then all it takes to lose your team is for somebody down the street to offer them just a little bit more. And when it comes down to it, people love to win. They want to improve. They want to be a part of something that's bigger than themselves, and they want to feel appreciated. So our job as leaders is to create that sort of culture where people are winning, feeling appreciated, and they're part of something bigger than themselves.
I absolutely love where this is going. And I got a sidebar question because I'm a big advocate of, and Eric can attest to this, human behavior. We love it. We talk about it in our class all the time. You're seeing a mix of employees that are in the workforce right now that are all about the money. And you've got these newer, younger employees that are more about being a part of something or having extra days off or maybe a title. What would you recommend a business to do to understand what kind of employee they have and how they can motivate them?
Well, first of all, I would say that it's you have to make a decision with your team. At some point in the culture that we're in today, are you going to have a transactional type of relationship or are you going to have a relational team? And we had to make a decision early on with our company that, you know, especially through 2020 and, you know, everything that happened around that time frame, there are a lot of people that say, you know what, I just want to stay home. I want to work from home and I'll get my job done. I don't need relationships. That's fine. But that's not going to be the way that our company operates. And so, you know, for us, we want to be relational. And the more that you continue to have relationships and build those, you'll understand what's important to your team.
Oh, okay. All right. So when someone joins a team, what behaviors do you look for in the first 30, 60 days that tell you whether they're going to be successful or they're going to struggle?
You know, Patrick Lencioni says that the three things that you're looking for in a great teammate is somebody that's hungry, humble, and smart. And you can pretty quickly see if somebody has those traits. Early in that first 30 to 60 days, you should know for sure if they carry that. If you consistently see somebody that's hungry and humble, then they're going to be coachable. And if you want a long-term career with somebody on your team, you definitely are looking for somebody that's coachable.
Love that answer. Hungry, humble, and what was the third one?
Smart.
Smart. All right. I'm taking notes.
We're looking for people that have a good memory. Just kidding.
Jameson, you've worked with a lot of high performing individuals, right? I mean, I know one name right off the top of my head, Dominic, right? The man's amazing. His leadership. When we first met, I seen his leadership growing, and what I've seen him evolve to over the past couple of years is a direct connection to what I see your mentorship on. And it's amazing to see what personality traits show up most often in top performers that many leaders overlook.
I actually love this question, Eric. Thank you for asking it, because you use the word trait, and a lot of people confuse personality traits with the ability to perform. Woo. I learned something from Lou Adler a long time ago, and I don't know if you guys follow Lou Adler, but just a mastermind when it comes to recruiting and hiring top performers. But he gives four A's that you have to remember all the time. All of us have certain biases toward these A's: affable, articulate, assertive, and attractive. Those four things, you may like them. Like someone that's assertive, you may dislike that, or you may love it. But those four things do nothing to determine if someone is going to be a top performer or not. And so if I had to say, what's the top thing that we overlook? It's a competitive drive. Competitiveness is the most important trait that's often overlooked. If you have somebody that winning means something to them, then all you have to do is put them in an environment where they can win and they'll perform at a high level.
Oh, that's great. That really reflects on any endeavor that you're doing, right? Whether it's sports, whether it's business, whether it's relationship, right? Being competitive, you can have all the talent in the world, but do you want that willingness to win? That's great. I love that.
You have to have the drive.
When you first started building your team and the company, what was one leadership decision you made early that had a huge impact on the culture later on?
So whenever I started our company, Relentless Dealer Services, that was later sold to an Easy Care company, before I had a federal identification number, before I had a logo, before I had just about anything, I had values written out. I knew it was important to me to have certain value set that we were going to live by, and it needed to be in writing. But then as we started building our team out, I realized that, we all know people aren't going to buy into something that they don't feel like they're a part of. So I had this list, and we try to hire people that follow that. But what I wanted more importantly was for the team to have say so in what our values were going to be. And so we had a team meeting. It was this monthly team meeting. Everybody came in and I said, look, bring words with you of what's important to you at work. And everybody did it. We had a whiteboard up there and everybody just kept giving more words. Like, what's important? Give me one or two words. What's important to you at work? And so we filled up this whiteboard. We went back and we eliminated all the duplicates. We didn't plan it this way. It just turned out to be there were eight of them. So now we have eight values that are important to us that the team created. And then we took one more step. And this is in the book, by the way, Building a Championship Team. It's the whole story is in there. But the next step is we said, okay, what is, if we took any one of these traits and somebody had all the others, but they didn't have this one, which of these traits would eliminate them from being a part of our team? And as it turned out, and we had some great argument, a lot of discussion over this, but as it turned out, there were four that we said, these are non-negotiable. If somebody doesn't have any one of these, they're not welcome on the team. And then we had four that are aspiring. Like, hey, we want to do this. Each of us want to do this, but we don't do it all the time. And so those were our aspiring values. And that, that was a turning moment in our team, that our team really embraced those values and we lived with those moving forward.
It's so amazing to hear the building of greatness, right? Even from a foundational standpoint, and leadership foundation is the strongest part of it. It's what keeps everything together. And I read books, I follow people, I look at social media, and It's all the great things and all the wins and all the pluses, but you know where leadership really, really comes in is in the hard times, in the tough conversations. And I know you've had those. What is one of the hardest conversations you've ever had with someone on your team? And what did it teach you about leading people?
Yeah, that's the part of leadership that isn't fun. I think for me, one of the hardest conversations that you ever have is when you have a top performer, somebody that's getting their job done, they're applying for a promotion, and they don't qualify for the promotion.
Oh my God.
That's the worst. And, you know, early on in my career, I was guilty of giving people the promotion because they were performing at a high level. And that's one of the biggest mistakes we can make as well. Have you guys heard of the Peter Principle?
No.
Oh.
Okay. So the Peter Principle was a guy named Peter, believe it or not. And it was actually a satire book, but he puts in there that he says that we promote to the level of incompetence. So in a dealership, somebody comes in, they're a great salesperson. So we think, man, they should be a sales manager. So we make them a sales manager. Well, they're not necessarily good at leading a team, building their team, training, all of those things. So they have now been promoted to the level of their incompetence. Or it could be another level, right? Like maybe we promote them to sales manager. So they do a good job there. Then we promote them to GM. Well, they can't, you know, run a P&L. So I've been so guilty of doing that. I've promoted people to their level of incompetence. And then they leave and they go down the street and they go back to the position that they were great at and they kill it, you know, for your competitor. That's what I love about our interview process that is defined in our book, is that conversation becomes a whole lot easier because for a promotion internally, it's the same interview process. And as you go through this process, I've literally multiple times had someone say to me in the middle of the interview while they were applying for this promotion, I've had them stop and say, you know what? I don't think I'm ready for the promotion.
Wow. That's certainly deep. I love that. So this journey that you've been on, how long has this been evolving for you?
This, the building a championship team?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have always loved building a team. It's something that's always meant a lot to me. But several years ago, probably about, 10 or so years ago, I was tasked with building out 11 dealerships in 10 months. And many of these were greenfields where we were starting with nothing. And I knew then that there was no way that we could guess. We couldn't guess and get it right. And so, I devoured everything I could on recruiting, building a team, you know, every part about building this out. And that was a turning point in my career where I just started putting all that together for myself. And it turned into a system that as I started working more with Dom, and he does phenomenal on the development side, we started presenting this to groups about 6 years ago and finally have put it into book form.
Wow. Okay. So there are a ton of leaders listening to this right now, and many leaders want to build a great team, right? But they skip over hiring, you know, discipline, right? What is one hiring mistake that ends up costing them months or years later on down the road?
Well, you know, I think a lot of your audience is from the dealership world. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
And certainly all types of leadership. And really, I think of a dealership as an example. Almost every dealership I know of have processes in place for sales. They have specific processes for F&I and service. For this, you know, every aspect of it, they have these clearly defined processes, but yet so few of them have a clearly defined process for recruiting and hiring people. And if you don't have a clearly defined system in place, predetermined interview questions that you're going to ask every single person, if you don't have a scoring system in place to score those interviews so it's scored fairly, you're probably going to make a mistake bringing the wrong person on. Most leaders hire the best interviewer. They don't hire the best performer. And you don't build a championship team by managing people better. You build it by selecting the right people in the first place.
Jameson, let me ask you about that one more time so that we can dissect that, because I'm hearing it. I'm trying to understand it. explain, what do you mean by they hire the best interviewer?
Well, I mean, if you think about any position, you think about any position. And again, let's go back to a dealership. We're kind of living there today. You think about the best service advisor you've ever met. Think about the top five. Okay. And then think about how those would perform in an interview. If you interviewed those, would they all interview great? Chances are they would not. Being good at interviewing, like on the person that's applying for the job, just because somebody is really good at interviewing, it doesn't mean they're really good at performing.
Right.
And the opposite is true. Just because somebody's a great performer doesn't mean they're going to do well in an interview. And it's so easy to get confused with that when we're interviewing somebody. And again, a lot of times it goes back to those four A's Lou Adler talks about. We really like them. They're articulate, you know, and they have all these traits we like. So we bring them on the team. Those traits have nothing to do with performance.
You know, this reminds me of a situation that I personally ran into, and I talk about this in our training quite a bit. As a service advisor, I was leading the pack, right, when it came to numbers and performance and things of that nature. But I felt that I was continuously getting passed up to that promotion that you talked about. And it wasn't that I was turned down or it was declined. It's just simply you got selected, right? And I felt that I wasn't being selected, which is a form of being passed up. So I finally went and knocked on the door, and that's when I knew that I met my very first mentor. I asked, if my numbers are high, if I'm performing at the highest of the store, why can't I get an opportunity at management and leadership? And he told me, he goes, you speak and you think like a competing advisor, not like a leader or a manager. You want to talk about being punched in my soul? That was it right there, right? And I didn't understand what he meant. So he asked me some basic questions. What's important to you? Getting the sale, right? Getting the profit, all the numbers that, let's call it what it is, and I'm going to say it, everything that's important on the pay plan, right? Yeah. Everything that's important on the charts and the objectives. He goes, again, you're speaking from a you standpoint. You don't speak to us in a how does it benefit the entire team standpoint. And that when you talked about competitive drive right now, that's the importance of it. My competitive drive took over because I'm said, okay, now I need to go learn and be number one at learning what it means to the team. I have to take that in. And sometimes you have to be able to balance that out. I don't know if that's something that you see sometimes where you have to balance that competitive drive to an operational standpoint versus an individual standpoint.
Yeah, Eric. I mean, the key is how do we win? How do we put, you're a competitive person, how do I put you in a position where you win? And as long as winning to you is hitting those numbers as a service advisor, that's how you're going to win. But here's where our interview process identifies whether you're capable of the next level or not. So before you ever hire for any position, we have what we call a map. We put into place, what is the missions, what are the actions, and the performance then that determines it. So I don't care so much about what someone has. I care about what they do. So people have certifications, education, experience. That stuff doesn't necessarily relate to performance. Performance is based on what you do. So we look at the position and we say, what does this person need to do in order to win at this position? Okay, so now that we have that written out, we have it on the map. Now, if I'm going to interview you for a promotion, you're going to have a copy of the map. And I say to you on the map, one of the things that we need our service manager to do is we need to grow our total gross from $3.5 million to $4 million in the next 6 months. So I'm going to ask you now two questions in the interview, and this is with every action that's on there, two questions. Number one, tell me about a time in the past where you've done something similar. If you can tell me about a time in the past you've done something similar, you can probably do it again.
Yeah.
The second question is, tell me how you would go about doing that. And if you sit there and say, I don't know how I would do that. I'm, you know, interested in getting an extra $100 from the customer in front of me. You're probably not ready for the promotion. But if you say, you know, I know how much a technician is worth. We've got an extra bay back here. I'm going to add a technician. I'm going to, you know, you start putting together a plan into place. You're probably ready for the promotion.
Oh, I can't wait to jump into this book. This is going to be awesome. Just hearing this stuff gets me going. When a team begins to grow quickly, what usually breaks first? Communication, accountability, or clarity of roles?
Man, that's a tough question. I don't know that it's the same in every situation. I feel like the greatest challenge in all human relationships is communication. I feel like that's where I fail the most, and I think most people do. Who was it that said that you know, the biggest challenge with communication is the fact that we think it happened? You know, many times it doesn't. And you said communication. What were the other two?
Accountability and clarity of roles.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like all of that is communication. So if I had to say it, I'd say communication. What would you say, Eric? What are your thoughts?
For me, the biggest problem is clarity of roles, because you have the person who is, you see the team growing, and then you're making that push, right? So now you have the person, let's just use a service advisor. Well, now the service advisor starts moving cars. Then they start washing a car. Then they start, all of a sudden you see them rotating tires in the service shop, right? And and they pull themselves out of,
yeah,
hey,
that's good.
Stay in your lane, be a great service advisor. There's going to be areas that we have to see gaps and failures in order to repair them. But the advisor is so focused on winning, they don't realize that what they're actually doing by making that happen is actually making their position weak and doesn't give upper management clear view of areas that need to be filled in.
That's good.
Yeah. I you know, Eric, I love where you're going with this, because this reminds me of when we were in a training class together and you talked about this. You talked about the service manager in a busy drive doing all that stuff, and you kind of pulled them aside saying, that's not your role. Your role is to do this. If you overload the shop because you're trying to help out the advisors, you're missing out on all the opportunity after the fact, right? To me,
that might have been a personal question, just throwing that out there.
to me, communication is a lot of it. And I can sit here and say I'm the best communicator in the world, but if you guys don't comprehend what I'm saying, am I the best communicator in the world? No. We've got to, you know, we really need to look at who are we talking to. We got to use our words correctly, and we've got to be able to relate to that person at the utmost basic level to get them to understand what the accountability is, what the roles are, what the day-to-day of their role looks like, right? So I love that. That's a great question, and I love how you guys answered it. Jameson, in business, like automotive and RV, where sales and performance matter every day, how do you prevent a team from being transactional instead of mission driven?
Yeah, I love the book Start With Why. I think it's something that we have to keep in front of us all the time. Why are we doing this? You know, why are we here? I love numbers probably as much as anybody on the planet. But if that's all we see, then we do become transactional. And I've probably been guilty of having teams that wondered if they were working inside of a spreadsheet instead of inside of a dealership. And, I mean, I've been as guilty as anyone else. Great teams talk about numbers. We have to have scoreboards. They have to be up. But we've got to talk about why the work matters. We're not just selling equipment. Whatever you sell, there in some way, we are serving humankind. If you're selling cars, you're helping someone with transportation. You're helping them make memories. We're helping families grow and they need a bigger vehicle. We're helping somebody, you know, sometimes acquire their dream. We're celebrating with people all of the time. And if we come in with a mindset every day of how can I serve my teammates? How can I serve my customers? And we really focus on that, then man, it's never just going to be a transaction.
No. And that word transaction is a very powerful word in all customer service sales. The reason why I say that is because too many times it's one of the invisible clouds that overtakes the experience and people do not recognize it. It becomes transactional without us realizing that it's actually erasing the word experience. Now, I know moving forward, my coffee is going to taste better because as I read this book, this is one of the areas that I am going to be looking for. I love being challenged. I love my thoughts that I've held and carried with me for so long to be torn apart, broken down, and rebuilt. Now, in your new book, it focuses on leadership and team development, correct?
That's exactly right.
What is one idea in the book that might challenge how many leaders currently run their teams?
Ooh.
Okay, so here's what I would say. At some point, every leader needs to evaluate where they are on the family versus team scale. And you'll find this in the book.
Okay.
I've heard a lot of people say that they have a family at work. And what I'm going to challenge you with is I don't want a family at work. I hope everyone has a wonderful family, we'll call it, and that, you know, their tribe, the people that they surround themselves with outside of work. I hope everyone has that. I certainly have a great one, but I want a team at work. And what is the difference? Families are about belonging. Teams are about winning. I like to win, and I can tell you the people on my team like to win. On a great team, team members have each other's back. There's no question. We're loyal. We love each other, but we are about winning. So where's this scale? On the far end of the family scale, that's somebody that says, you know what? That's Aunt Betty. She's worked here 40 years, and I know she doesn't get things right, but she's Aunt Betty. And so she's got a job until the day she dies. That's the far end of the family scale. On the far opposite end on the team scale is think about a fantasy football team. You're going to put the player in that's going to help you get the most points. You don't care how long they've been there. You don't care whether, you know, how much you like them. You don't care about anything except how are they going to help me win. Somewhere you got to determine where you are on that scale, because that's going to determine how you deal with how people perform or don't.
Ooh. Wow. If I had a sound effect, I would just have like fireworks and cheering right after that answer that question. That was amazing, right? I love your outlook on this, and I can't wait to jump into the book. Where can we find the book?
Oh, it's on Amazon. Yeah.
All right. Everything's on Amazon.
Everything's on Amazon. Just go to Amazon. Hold on. There it is. If you're watching this, I'm holding the book up, Building a Championship Team. Super pumped too that our foreword is written by Dave Anderson. So he has just been one of the most influential authors in my life. So the foreword is by him. Just released this last week. And make sure you grab a copy.
Oh, I am definitely grabbing a copy. And next time I see you, I'm going to have you sign it. I'll be a big fanboy. Looking back at your career building teams, what is one leadership belief you had early on that you later realized was completely wrong?
You know, I think early on when I was leading teams, I somehow just believed that good people always make good teammates. And that's not necessarily true. What I would say is good teammates are good people, but good people aren't necessarily good teammates. Being a teammate is something that requires something more. It requires accountability. It requires the competitiveness we talked about, putting the success of the team ahead of your personal comfort. So kind of goes back to the family versus team idea. That's a mistake I made early on. I put people on my team because I knew they were great people. They didn't make great teammates. So that's something I learned over time is you need good people, but you're really looking for a good teammate.
Love that. Now, this is to me one of the hardest questions that I have to ask in this entire podcast, because I have more than this. But if there are people listening right now, and we have many leaders listening right now, what are three takeaways they could take from today's podcast?
Well, establish your team versus family so that you know how you're going to deal. Are you going to have a winning team, or are you just going to have a family at work? So start with establishing that. Put a process into place for interviewing and for scoring those interviews, and then put an environment in place with your team where everyone knows whether they're winning or not. It comes down to clarity. What is the clarity for your team? What's the clarity for hiring the position? And then have clear direction when it comes to how can people win.
Ooh, those are some great takeaways. We could put those in the back of a t-shirt. Jameson, we like to have fun when we do this with this podcast. So I'm going to ask you this question. Outside of leadership, outside of work, outside of family, what does Jameson like to do for fun? On a random Saturday, what is Jameson doing?
Well, right now I'm training to run a half marathon, the Indy Mini.
All right, that doesn't sound like fun.
That's fun.
Okay.
You guys are welcome to join me.
Nope, so, I'm good. I'll cheer you on.
First Saturday in May, it's a big, you know, in Indianapolis, where I live, May is race month. So everything involves around that. The race actually leaves downtown, goes out to the track, and you run a portion of the track, which is super cool. You run over the bricks. So any random Saturday, I'm probably going to be running about 10 miles right now. But no, I love to run. I love to cycle. You said outside of family, but gosh, I mean, investing time with family, that's as good as it gets.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. Thanks for sharing that. EasyCare is a total performance provider working alongside your team to help achieve your goals in F&I and across the dealership. We are an award-winning provider and administrator of F&I products and can provide the tools, knowledge, and training needed to unlock the potential of your dealership. For more information on EasyCare or to be a guest on Forward, please feel free to send me an email at csmith@apcoholdings.com. Jameson, that is all the time that we have for today. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for being a part of this episode. And I'll ask this last question like I ask every guest. Will you please come back?
I would love to. I'd be honored.
Thank you, Jameson.
Thank you for listening to Forward, a podcast brought to you by EasyCare with your host, Corey Smith, and co-host Eric Howdige. Be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast. New episodes are released on the 5th and 20th of every month.